No. Well, it's not, nothing's agreed to, it's just our future plan. Future wish.
Good morning, it's 10 a.m. and I'm calling the meeting of the Story County Board of Supervisors to order on August 6th. First, I would like to make just a very brief statement. As we all know, yet again, our nation has suffered from gun violence. Last week, we had 31 people killed and over 50 wounded in mass shootings in El Paso, Texas, and Dayton, Ohio. Just days before that, 5 people were killed and 14 wounded in shootings in South Haven, Mississippi, and Gilroy, California. I would ask you all to join us in a moment of silence for the victims and their families and for our nation. Thank you. And now, if you would like to please join us to say the Pledge of Allegiance.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America, one nation under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Thank you, everyone. Supervisor Heddens is joining us by phone today. We'll first go then to adoption of the agenda. Are there any changes to the agenda? If not, I would entertain a motion.
I move that we adopt the agenda as listed today.
Is there a second?
I second.
Thank you. Moving second, Olson.
Aye.
Heddens.
Aye.
Merkin. Aye. The agenda is adopted. Thank you. Next, public comment number one, and that is for the public to address any topics on today's agenda. Is there anybody in the public who would like to address an agenda topic? If so, would you please move to the microphone? Seeing nobody moving to the microphone, I'll close the public comment section. And now, next, we have a proclamation recognizing August 11th through 17th as American Wind Week. And excuse me, I need to read the proclamation. Okay, I will read through this quickly. American Wind Week is August 11th through 17th, 2019. Whereas Iowa ranks second in the nation for wind power capacity with nearly 9,000 megawatts installed, producing enough energy to power nearly 2.1 million homes. And whereas Iowa's wind production also ranks second in the nation at 34% of all in-state electricity production, with current and future projects estimated to bring wind share of electricity production to over 40% by 2020. And whereas Iowa is home to 114 wind farms and 10 wind-related manufacturing facilities, and whereas wind powers opportunities in cities and communities all across Iowa, resulting in $58 million in state and local tax payments and $20 to $30 million in land lease payments in 2018 alone, and whereas wind farms in Iowa have attracted over $16.3 billion in private investment to date, helping to spur critical investments in communities to fund manufacturing jobs, education programs, and local economic development projects, and whereas the development of wind power now supports nearly 10,000 jobs across the state, and whereas Story County has been a national leader in the development and implementation of regulations guiding wind development while also incorporating tax revenues from wind farms in overall economic development programming and strategies with countywide impacts, and final whereas, the advancement of wind power will greatly enhance our ability to attract new businesses and talent to our state and community, and wind energy will continue to grow as a major force in the U.S. economy. Now, therefore, be it resolved that we, the Story County Board of Supervisors, do hereby recognize August 11th through 17, 2019, as American Wind Week in Story County and encourage Iowans to learn more about wind's impact on our community and celebrate Iowa's leadership in wind energy production. Okay, is there a motion?
I'll make the motion to adopt the Wind Energy Proclamation.
Thank you. A second?
I will second.
Okay. Discussion?
None.
Okay. Heddens?
Aye.
Olson?
Aye.
Merkin? Aye. Proclamation is adopted. Thank you. Next, we'll go to agency reports. Jerome Rayworth is going to report with the Juvenile Court Annual Report.
Good morning.
Good morning. First of all, I'd like to say thanks to the board and to Story County for having a great relationship with Juvenile Court Services. As you know, we're part of the judicial branch, but we appreciate your accommodations, your working relationship with the sheriff, the county attorney, and of course, facility management. In my report, the highlights would be the $100,000 line item for our protective living. This is a line item for children that are placed in detention and shelter care, and it also pays for any medical expenses while they're in the detention facility. As you can see, we utilize 51% of the line item. That's pretty consistent over the last few years. I think last year was at 52%. Juvenile Court Services had 20 clients that utilized over $30,000. The Department of Human Services had 19 clients at $13,700. And then we had medical expenses for those children in detention at $7,400. In FY19, Juvenile Court Services only placed two kids in shelter care that were court ordered. We had one at the youth, at the YSS Rosedale shelter, and we had another one down at the Youth Emergency Services shelter in Des Moines. And they had an average of 26 and a half days for those two children. Also in FY19, we placed 17 kids in detention for a total of 276 days, which was a 16-day average for each child. As you can see, we also have another line item for personal items of $50, and we used 0% of that. And FY20, we're just getting started, and we've already used 5% of the protective living, and hopefully it remains as low as it was last year. On page 2 of my report, this is our final time of reporting allocations to youth and shelter services. As you can see, there's 5 different line items there, the last one being a grant that we helped keep track of, so to speak. And we have the balance on each one of those, and then also the percent that was used on the far right. Also part of my report is I attached a 2-page letter from the judicial branch. Our state court administrator wrote a letter in May kind of proclaiming the state of juvenile court services and the judicial branch's budget for the upcoming year. And then finally, I listed kids that we have out of their home currently. We currently have 4 children at the state training school. We currently have 1 child in detention, 1 child in shelter at the YES shelter in Des Moines. We have 4 children in residential treatment. 2 are at the Woodward Academy. 1 is at Youth Homes of Mid-America in Johnston. And we have 1 at the 4 Oaks Stop Program, which is a sex offender facility in Cedar Rapids. We currently have 3 children that we're monitoring on GPS. And we have 0 that are on runaway status currently. And then finally, I have the 2 attachments, 1 being the letter from the state court administrator, and 2 being our complaints and allegations for FY19 received through the Ames office. Any questions?
I'm sorry. Go ahead, Laura. No, go ahead, Laura.
It was Linda, actually, believe it or not, first. Go, Linda.
So, Jerome, my questions are in regards to the placement. Can you tell me how long, like, the kids have been at the state training school or residential treatment?
I'll start with residential treatment. So, 2 years ago, the Department of Human Services had new contracts with our group care providers, our residential facilities. And they have an initiative for payment if our children are only there for less than 180 days. So they've reprogrammed their facilities to get our kids in and out of there quicker. Part of that contract was also to keep the children closer to their residence. We can only place kids in our service area, which we're part of the Des Moines service area. So Woodward Academy, which is relatively close, 30 miles basically from Story County. And then we can utilize the Johnston facility, which again, 40 minutes from anywhere in Story County basically. And then we use the two shelters, either the Rosedale shelter or the Yes shelter, which is located in Des Moines. As far as the state training school, one, you have to qualify to be a resident there, to be a student, and those qualification standards are listed in the Iowa code. Again, we're trying to get kids through that program as quickly as we can. Some kids struggle earning their weeks, advancing through the program. Some kids struggle getting their education accomplished. The highlight of the state training school is when we have a child that possibly didn't have much of a chance in the community of obtaining a diploma. They're able to reach that status at the state training school, and sometimes we keep them longer in that facility to achieve that goal. Does that answer your question, Lisa?
Yes, it does. Thank you very much.
I saw that you currently have 4 kids in the training school. How does that run historically? I think Story County has always been very low.
Yes. So we're part of the second judicial district, and we're allocated that we can have 14 beds. And right now, we are at our capacity for the second district. And part of that, not to bore you, Linda, but part of that has to do with our restrictions on where we can place kids.
Mm-hmm.
So we can't place kids. Historically, we would use Clarinda. We would use Forest Ridge up in near Estherville for females. And we might use other facilities outside our service area. So with those restrictions and with kids that qualify, we've opted out for the state training school rather than regular group care.
Okay. Thank you.
We ended the fiscal year 19 in your statistics with assault being double the next highest reason that you're interacting with children at a 2-to-1. So can you make some comments there, Jerome, or give us some insight about how assault continues here to be such a serious problem?
Yeah, it's a serious problem. So our assaults come to our office in several different aspects. It may be assaultive behavior in the home. It may be assaultive behavior also at the school. However, a lot of our assaults that are listed here that you pointed out, Loris, come from some of the facilities that we have in Ames, such as the Beloit LSI facility. We receive a lot of referrals from there, from some of the YSS residential facilities. They have 3, including Rosedale, the 712 house and the youth recovery house. They're simple assaults for the most part, but there's some pushing, shoving, punching, that kind of dilemma going on. And we're always working on trying to prevent that with the help of other agencies in Story County, preventative measures. Our schools do a very good job with education and preventative measures as well.
Okay. Thank you. I just know the Juvenile Justice Committee that meets 9 months out of the year talks. There's ongoing discussion there about how some of our facilities are being asked to house more and more behaviorally challenged or violent juveniles.
Yeah, so our local residential facilities, to no fault of their own, are mixing populations. They're mixing children that are abused and neglected. They're mixing delinquent kids, and they're mixing kids that have mental health difficulties. And that's a challenge for them.
Yeah. Thank you.
You're welcome.
Lisa, did you have any other questions?
I do not.
Okay. Thank you.
Thank you.
Okay, next we'll have consideration of minutes. We have minutes from July 23rd and July 30th. Is there a motion?
I would move that we approve them as presented.
Okay. Second?
I'll second.
Okay. Olson?
Aye.
Heddens?
Aye.
Merkin? Aye. Minutes approved. Next, personnel actions, and we have some listed there. I'd entertain a motion to approve the actions as listed.
I'll make the motion to approve the personnel actions as listed.
I'll second.
Okay. Heddens?
Aye.
Olson?
Aye.
Merkin? Aye. Next, personnel actions accepted. Now, consideration of claims from August 8th. A motion?
I'll make the motion that we approve as presented.
Okay. I'll second that.
Okay. Olson?
Aye.
Heddens?
Aye.
Merkin? Aye. Okay. And then we come to the consent agenda. I would entertain a motion to approve the items in the consent agenda as listed.
I make a motion to approve the items in the consent agenda as presented.
I second.
Okay. Heddens?
Aye.
Olson?
Aye.
Merkin? Aye. Consent agenda is approved. We will go on then. Item 11 is public hearing, so we have none today. So we'll go on to item 12, additional items. Assistant Auditor, Lisa Markley, has some information for us.
Good morning. Good morning. Lisa, have a wonderful time. So I want to send the amendment to the paper for public hearing on August 27th. That's at the regular board meeting, please. An early amendment in the FY is normal.
Mm-hmm.
We do it every year. Mm-hmm. They usually, it's usually because we need to carry over expenses that didn't happen at the end of 19. So you'll notice some of the same things we amended into the end of 19 are being carried forward into 20 because we didn't get them done. Overall, the amendment increases revenues by 26%. That includes bond proceeds. Okay. It's actually 2.25% excluding those. The last amendment for FY19 showed $3 million revenues dollar bond that did not occur before the end of the fiscal year. We're still working on that. Hopefully, it'll happen this week. Expenses in this amendment are increasing by 13.3%. $1.5 million of that is for the Storycom payments that are due this year. $569 is for urban renewal projects that are carried forward. We'll talk more about that later in the program or later in the meeting. And conservation expenses. 3.4 are capital projects carried forward. So, as I said, a lot of it is carry forward expenses. The EFT committed funds being drawn down in this amendment are about $429,000. So, just so you're aware of that, I tried to note the EFT. On the side of the amendment information. There are also adjustments in this amendment for employees insurance in some departments that have different usage than budgeted. We talked about at budget time that in February when we're putting a budget together, we have no idea who's going to take insurance. All we can do is base it on what has previously happened. We had after the sign-up period and we started the new year, there were some departments that were a little people switch to family, so it's going to be closer. So I thought I'd go ahead and amend them in right now. The information that's highlighted on the document indicates amounts requested by the department. So I highlighted what was requested by the departments. The rest of it is Lisa's numbers that she put in here. Lisa, me. The amendment will get published as required by law. It has to be published 10 to 20 days before the public hearing. With the public hearing being held, as I said, 8/27. At that hearing, you can lower the expenses by service in the service areas, but you cannot raise them. Okay? Any questions on that amendment information that I presented to you?
Any questions?
I have none, just a comment. Once again, thank you, Lisa, for making it very clear for us and for the members of the public about what exactly we're doing.
You're welcome.
Yeah, I have no questions. And yes, thank you for the information.
Okay, do we need a motion?
I don't think we need a motion. I just think you need to, well,
can we direct
me to send it to publication.
Okay. Right. So done. Thank you. Okay, now we have Darren Moon and Evan Duvall. Okay. Regarding the Dakota Access.
Excuse me, I'm going to back up. It does say consideration on the agenda, so we should go ahead and make the motion.
Okay.
Yeah. I move that we ask the auditor's office to send the first fiscal year 20 budget amendment to publication for the public hearing.
Is there a second?
I'll second.
Okay.
I'll
thank you. Okay. Olson?
Aye.
Settings?
Aye.
Merkin? Aye. Thank you for catching that. Okay. Now, Jaron?
Okay.
Good morning.
Morning.
Mr. DeVoe?
Good morning.
Good morning.
Just briefly before I turn it over to Evan, we're hopefully here just to close out the completion of the Dakota Access Pipeline project. I believe it was mechanically completed a little over 2 years ago, but we've been working on some landowner inspection issues that ISG's been handling in Story County and some other counties. They have a contract for a number of counties that are working as a group. So I think we're finally to the point where, one, we had some damage to our roads, and they have paid that bill as of June. So we had about $10,000 in road damages. So that has been cleared. So we are prepared to go ahead with the closeout process based on what Evan tells us next, if there's anything open that he knows of.
Well, thanks for having us. No, to answer the question, Story County, I'm going to be a little back history on this. There were 42 punch list items within this county at one point. All of those have been closed out. That's either through mitigation done by the contractor or an agreement made between the pipeline and the landowner. There were 11 notices of violations in the county. Same thing, those were handled. There are none open. Those have done either mitigation or agreements. So at this point, to get the next process started, which is the County Compensation Commission process, if it's needed, this board needs to consider the project closed, and that's what we're here to recommend. It's something that we can do ultimately. This board has to decide that that's proper at this point.
Okay. And I have a question. First of all, thank you again for when you met with me and Ethan Anderson several months ago to help explain what was going on, where we were in the process. I appreciate that. So these 11 notices of violation, were they also fined? Was DAPL fined, or was this just a situation where once they were resolved, they were
resolved? So the notice of violation process was more or less the punch list item that we had going while the construction process was ongoing. It's just the term that was used. It was how we documented things that needed to get fixed, and we worked with the pipeline and the landowner to make sure that those were addressed during the process. So no, there were no fines levied. One, that's not our role. We wouldn't be levying any of those. And they were all handled appropriately.
Thank you.
So does that mean that all the landowners are satisfied, or are some going to be pursuing other action?
That's a question you would have to ask each individual landowner. To date, we have not had anything come to our attention, and we've been in contact with the pipeline on this throughout the entire process. So we're not aware of anything within the county, within Story County, that's outstanding. That doesn't mean that landowners are fully satisfied, but that's not nothing that I'm aware of right now. So what this process does, according to Iowa Code 479B30, is if landowners have ongoing issues, whether that's grading issues, tile issues, other issues associated with this project that are impacting their agricultural production, they can come to this board, ask that the county compensation process begin. If after their presentation you agree with that, it goes to a court Judge, I believe, again, this is probably best directed towards your county attorney to answer these questions. Mm-hmm. But then it brings in a third party to kind of assess what the issue is, whether or not it's attributable to the pipeline project, and if there is a financial compensation portion to that. You ask me in 2 years, and you may have a better answer for you whether or not that's true. So.
Thank you. Supervisor Hedden, did you have any questions?
I do not at this time, thank you.
Okay.
I would say I had at least one landowner call with interest in this compensation commission. It wasn't, I don't think, due to incomplete work. It was due to more like damages that he feels like he's due. So I let him know of this meeting today, and he's wanted me to let him know so he could be aware of that 90-day time period. So I'm not sure if he'll claim or not, but that's a possibility.
Okay. Thank you. So we have a resolution in front of us to say that the pipeline was completed. Is there a motion to approve that resolution?
I would move that we approve Resolution 20-07 to declare that the Dakota Access Pipeline was mechanically completed on May 15th, 2017. And I'd like to note that the Scribner errors would be corrected before we sign it. There's a couple of errors.
Okay. We'll look at that later then.
Yeah. We can look at that later.
I'll second that motion.
Okay. Motion is second. Any discussion? Olson?
Aye.
Seddons?
Aye.
Merkin? Aye. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Okay. Next, we have discussion and consideration of a salt storage building, contract for salt storage building in Kelly. Darren Moon again.
This is an item that probably could have been handled through the consent agenda, but I knew I was going to be here anyway, so I thought I'd just show it to you while I was here.
Okay.
Because it was budgeted under our buildings and grounds budget item under this current fiscal year. This is what the building will look like down at Kelly. We've built the Kelly shed, and this will go behind that or off to the west side of the Kelly building. We chose to go with Freedom Buildings. We got a few different quotes, and this one had some unique options, and hot dip galvanized because of the salt. We're concerned about corrosion, and they have more of a truss system on the inside rather than a single bar, which makes it a little stronger.
Good.
We plan to pour the slab ourselves with our own crews, and we're currently purchasing these blocks from Manass as they become available, so we should have those all fairly soon. And then the other good thing about this company is they actually install, or most of them don't, so they have their own crews that install, so they know what they're doing when they come to install it. So this price does include installation, which is nice. So with that, if you have any questions, otherwise I recommend approval.
Okay. Any questions, Darren?
No, I have no questions.
Yep. Okay. I have no questions.
Okay, I'm going to entertain a motion for approval of the contract for the salt storage building in Kelly. Excuse me.
I'll make the motion to approve the contract for the salt building in Kelly.
I will second.
Okay. Hedens?
Aye.
Olson?
Aye.
Merkin? Aye. Thank you, Darren.
Thank you.
And you have the next one also.
One more.
You're on a roll.
What we have here is a resolution for a bridge embargo. We do this every 2 years. That's based on our federal requirements to inspect all our bridges every 2 years. When we get our results back from those inspections, we have some load posting changes on some of the bridges. So what essentially this resolution is doing is making these load postings official. Say somebody goes out and goes overloaded through one of these bridges and falls through it, we could technically hold them responsible for damages, but that's why you're passing this. There's been times when people have gone through bridges and the board didn't officially approve these, so they were let off scot-free.
I know our discussion of the bridge it's over the skunk, right, by the water, the Ames water treatment plant?
Yes.
Okay. I know in that particular situation, I'd asked about our ability to go ahead and claim damages, and I think there were a couple of obstacles there with them. In fact, just not knowing who had broken it. So I certainly understand part of that. It's also a safety issue, though, right?
Yes.
We're doing this for. So
I do want to point out a couple things with this. First of all, the ones with numbers are the load postings that you'll see on this sign. This is our typical weight limit sign. Those are the three numbers on the resolution you'll see for different types of trucks. And then at the bottom, about 15 years ago, we started adding these all vehicles so the farmers could kind of get it. It covers everything, tractors, so they didn't feel like they're exempt. They could go over that with anything. So that's what these numbers are. And the one lane ones mean that only one vehicle can be on at a time. Otherwise, it would be load posted if you have two opposing vehicles on the bridge at the same time. So if we post it one lane, we don't have to load post the bridge. So that's why you see a lot with one lane. And the other thing I want to point out is there's a number of closures in this resolution. I think we have 6 bridge closures. Four of them were on there prior to 2 years ago, but there are two new ones I wanted to address with you to make you aware of. The first one down in Indian Creek 13. It's an old arch structure that has these high head walls on it. What happened is this spring, one of the floods eroded some more material from underneath the bridge and the bottom collapsed. And the actual arch structure is heavily damaged to the point it cannot be opened again. It's not repairable either. It's starting to collapse on top of the road as well. So this was immediately closed, but this is kind of an official action by the board to say this is closed. And you really have no option. It needs to be closed. Whether we put this in the five-year program, and we discuss that probably sometime in January or not, that can be open for discussion. But we did have this in the five-year program 3 years ago, I believe it was, and it was dropped because of you can see the stream comes in at a really tight angle here, looking upstream. Looking at aerial view, you can see that. To put a culvert in there would be a really long structure to try to match in with the high skew of this bridge. So the cost estimates came in really high. So at that time, the board decided just to remove it from the program and try to get some extra life out of the existing structure. And unfortunately, it didn't take too long for it to reach the end of its life. Here's the structure right here in Indian Creek, section 13. There's a road a half a mile away, so that's one of the other things the board factored in. It's not a long detour. There's a couple homes here. I did send letters to all the landowners a couple weeks ago warning of the closure and see if there's any comments, and I really haven't received any. I don't think the homeowner would be too upset. It'll be less traffic. It'll be more probably of a farmer issue with access back and forth across the stream, but I have not heard from any of them yet. So that's one of the closures that are new. That's this one right here. This is the traffic count map, just to show you it gets 20 vehicles a day on that road. The next one I'm going to go to is the other closure is over here by Cambridge. That one gets 30 vehicles a day. That is right here. The yellow dot's what we call the hole in the wall. That's the culvert that the bike path goes over, and then our wood bridge is just to the north of that. This is the hole in the wall. You can see our wood bridge on the other side. This is what it looked like this spring under the poor thaw conditions, and this bridge has been posted 5 tons for a long time, so we cannot get a motor grader over it, so it's really hard for us to maintain and keep it in good condition. And then the spring flooding washed out material in the back wall, so there's a huge suck hole. So at this time, the board gave me some direction just to keep this closed until you took official action. We did hold an actual hearing on this one probably 4 years ago to get landowner input on if we should close this or not. At that time, the board decided just to keep it open a little longer. There were some farmers that said they hauled grain over it, which was concerning because it is posted 5 tons. And then this is the one, the last time our bridge inspectors were out there, a loaded school bus went over while they're underneath, and that concerned them a lot. So they talked to the school immediately and that's when the board kind of said, we probably need to get this structure closed. Mm-hmm. We did some repairs about 10 years ago to one of the piers to try to extend the life, but it's the south abutment that's the real problem. It's really hard to see in the photos, but it's really bowed out, and this pile here is almost completely rotted, and it's really bowed, so we really can't take that out to fix it. It would probably collapse the whole abutment. So, and it's pretty high. That's 15, 20 foot, so if somebody did go through this bridge, they'd have a pretty good fall. So there's some safety concerns. So we have put, this is another bridge we've closed in the past. I wanted to point this out with the signage. We put about five of these across to permanently close bridges, and we get a lot of comments. People want us to leave these bridges in for walking structures. What happens, this one's just south of Highway 30, is 248th Street, I think it is. We get trucks that just come and just drive right over the top of the signs. So there should be signs in the middle of this road, but three times we've had to replace these because they just drive right over them. So if this keeps happening, we have a concern about this one down in Cambridge because we lose a lot of signs down in the Maxwell-Cambridge area. Mm-hmm. It seems to have a lot more vandalism down there. And this one in particular, we can't even keep the road closed signs up for a day, and they get taken down. So we may have to come and remove this bridge at some point. And we'll discuss both these bridges as part of the five-year program discussion if we want to replace either one of these in the future. But wanted to point those two closures out.
What would it cost to replace a bridge like that?
I think that one is in the range of $300,000. The first one we talked about, I think, was closer to $400,000 because of the length of the culvert. We can probably drop that back to a bridge and maybe do it for $350,000 or something. But
money.
The last one I just wanted to touch on, this is up north by Ziering, and our goal is to get this one fixed. It's hard to tell, but this is a brand new beam. It's lighter or darker color because it's brand new. It didn't even last one season, and that stringer got cracked. So we're hoping to actually remove the posting off this one. They looked at it, but we're actually lowering it. And we did fix a pile underneath to try to get the posting away. But the concern about this one, it's right here, this triangle. It's south of the intersection. There's a short stretch of level A road. Then it turns to level B, which is impassable most of the year. Somebody just built a brand new house right here. So if this structure does go out, they're going to have no access to their home. So I just wanted to point that out.
It's built on a level B road?
Just to the north of it.
Just to the north.
So it's on a level A.
It's on the A, but
yes.
Okay.
But for them to use the level B to get out, if the bridge has an issue, would be a difficult thing to do.
So, Darren, we would be responsible for the repair on that bridge then, correct?
Or yeah, we don't know who did it. There's some grain bins in the area that pretty good guess on how it happened, but
was it last year or the year before that you had to have a crew out like on Thanksgiving weekend for a bridge where we have only single access, one family access?
That was one of our driveway bridges, unfortunately.
Yeah.
It's a similar situation. That's our only way in and out. And, yes, we had to work quickly to get that one fixed so they could get to their home for Christmas.
Christmas it was.
Yeah.
Well, thank you for that once again. But they clearly offer some challenges beyond just the structure.
Correct. There's just a few issues I wanted to point out, and then we will create a new 2019 bridge posting map. We post on our website with all the load posted bridges, so we have that ready this week. I suppose this is a good point. I just want to point out quick, we do have one of our strategic plan goals, I believe it is. It's in there to reduce the number of posted bridges in the county. Just to give an idea why that's a bit of a struggle. Last 2017, we had 66 load posted bridges. Right now, with this resolution, counting the two new closed bridges, I think we're up to 68. So we actually went up, even though in those 2 years we replaced, I think, 12 bridges, replaced a handful more, so you'd think we'd go down, but one, some bridges deteriorate with time, but this one was more due to the fact of law changes of loadings. We had two law changes, one for some special haul vehicles that required us to load post more bridges, and then the most recent one was this this past year, due to some logging complaints, some loggers, mostly in northeastern Iowa, wanted to haul some heavier loads over some bridges. So legislature passed a law that allowed that, but that required all the counties to re-rate a lot of bridges and post. We'll probably have to post 10 to 15 more bridges because of that law change, and it really doesn't have a lot of impact in Story County, unfortunately. But it does affect us that way, so we're trying to make headway on replacing our bridges, but it was more the law change than anything. It doesn't make it look like it when you look at the load postings we have. So just wanted to point that out.
Thanks. Supervisor Haddon, do you have any questions?
I just have one question. Darren, the signage down in Cambridge, I know that you've had to replace that a number of times. I'm just wondering, how often are you having to replace that particular sign down there?
That one, it was just a couple weeks ago when we got those permanent signs put in with the post, but we have also left up the advance warning, the temporary signs we put in, the type threes with the fences on it. So we kind of have a double protection there right now. We haven't had a lot of time to see how the permanent signs are going to go as far as getting knocked down or not. So at some point we're going to take down the temporaries and see how the permanent ones go. If we're down there every month replace them, now I'll have to come back to board with some other recommendations.
Okay, thank you.
Any questions?
I just want to make note that Darren had passed on a email from Sheila, is it Dune or Dunn?
Yes, thank you.
Okay, would you like to talk about that a minute?
Yes, that was the second bridge down by Cambridge, so we did have one comment back on that one. And that was just based on her seeing the signs. I didn't send notices out to that one because we had held a public meeting in prior years on that one. But yeah, hers wasn't really a loading concern. It was more she just used that bridge, and she feels like that bridge is important to get people access to the Heart of Iowa bike path. So those were her concerns.
Thank you. And I have no questions.
Okay.
I would entertain a motion for approval of Resolution 20-10, Bridge Embargo.
I'll make the motion to approve Resolution 20-10, Bridge Embargo.
I second.
Okay. Discussion? Hearing none. Haddon?
Aye.
Olson?
Aye.
Merkin? Aye. Resolution is passed. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thanks, Darren. Oh, Darren, I just wanted to tell you that I was out a bit last week, may go out a little bit this week, just kind of driving around, just checking in with some of the crews,
sure.
And I was very impressed with the condition of the roads. I know they worked very hard. They have had a very tough last 6 to 7 months, and the roads look great. So thank you to everybody.
Finally starting to take shape.
I would second that. I was on a tour Saturday of a southern part of the county looking at the Conservation Commission parks, and I was looking at Zamer now, and I think this is a nice gravel road. So they're looking good.
Good.
Yes, and Darren, I would just like to say thank you for taking the time yesterday to visit with me out at your location and to introduce me to the individuals that you work with. Being a new supervisor, I really appreciate the opportunity to get to know all the employees throughout the county.
Yep, thank you.
So, next we have discussion and consideration for a quote between Story County and Calhoun Communications for a radio tower at Animal Control on budget. Barb?
Good morning.
And Jerry Moore.
Yeah.
Good morning, Board. Barb Steinbach, Information Technology. And Jerry Moore, Planning and Development. We're here to ask for consideration and approval for an expansion of the network project at Animal Control. Just a little background. We had budgeted $15,000 for a radio solution for that building. It was installed and in less time than we expected and tested, and turns out those darn pine trees at the cemetery are interfering with our radio signal. So the vendor came back with an additional solution, which would be to take that radio antenna and put it on a tower. So you can see the quotation, and the quote was for $7,800. However, if you look over on the left-hand side, they have credited us for the bracket for the antenna, and then also they're going to take the labor off of that. So the total cost for this tower would be about $2,900. But then when you talk about tower, you talk about safety, so we also need to pour a pad and put some fencing on. So facilities, Joby went out, looked at the area, and came up with about a $1,500 expense for some fencing. So we're looking at almost $5,000 in addition to the $15 we've already spent. So then, thank you, Linda, for the email. She asked if we had checked with the City of Nevada. Now, this property is not within city limits, but so I checked with Jerry from Planning and Development, and that added an additional complication to our seemingly simple solution to the project. And Jerry did a lot of research, and I really thank you for all the time you put into this, especially last-minute stuff. And so we had to make sure that the location of the tower was not within the easement and so far away from the road. We had originally thought we might put the tower on the southwest corner. Joby went out with the vendor and thought that was a good spot until Jerry mentioned some concerns. So now we're going to put it on the northwest corner, but we also have to have, what is it, a conditional use permit? How does that work?
Yeah, the Story County Land Development Regulations require for buildings and structures that are erected and used by, in this case, county entity, to go through a conditional use permit process. And because it's in a commercial light industrial district, there's also some additional detailed standards for non-commercial communication towers. And as Barb mentioned, Joby looked at the site and the proposed tower height and thinks that we can meet the requirement. That's 115% requirement of the setbacks based on the height and some additional standards.
With the conditional use permit, then, Jerry, as we go through that process, the adjacent landowners might want to weigh in. Has anybody felt them out at all? The people who actually own the lake and pond, whatever you want to call that,
yeah,
water.
We'll actually start with a conceptual review, which is just an informal sit down to communicate with the rest of the departments about the project. But our process would involve sending notices to all the landowners and then for the people to receive information about it.
And then it's my understanding that the conditional use permit would just allow Story County to use this tower and no one else.
Right. It's primarily for the use of, in this case, the county government.
So how long does that take usually for the CUP?
Well, I haven't actually looked at deadlines, but conceptual review we meet every week.
Okay.
So just a request by noon Tuesday, and then we meet this Thursday, we meet to talk about it. But the item would go to the Planning and Zoning Commission. We meet on Wednesday, first Wednesday of the month, and that would be followed up by the Board of Adjustment, which is going to be on the third Wednesday.
So we've missed it for this month.
You missed it for this month.
Yeah.
So I don't doubt that that will be doable. The question is, do we accept the quote now? Probably not. Or do we wait until we have a conditional use permit? I don't see a problem with accepting the quote now.
Yeah. I don't see any problem with it. Okay. We won't obviously pay for it until it's done. And if we don't end up being able to use this particular plan and hardware, then we just move on from
right.
that.
Correct.
You come back with something revised. But
we've looked at other options, and this is the best option considering the location of that building. Unfortunately, there's a few more things that we have to do to get it in place.
There's always a few more things, aren't there? Okay. Well, Jerry, thanks for getting on top of this right away and getting the information here for us. We appreciate that.
I should add, just for the record, that I did talk to
who would be representing us then?
I would think Sue Animal Control, since it's on their property.
Okay.
But Barb could be involved.
Yeah, I could.
Or require signatures from property owners. So
that wouldn't
maybe
be
it would involve the signature from the chair of the board. Because these things, again, they ultimately go to the Board of Justice.
Right, so we're not, the Board of Supervisors is not involved, or Ethan, check with Ethan. I mean, it's just, we'll have to have somebody there being our official representative. Okay. I'm prepared to make a motion.
Okay.
I move that we approve the quote between Story County and Calhoun Communications for radio tower, and also the estimated quote for fencing for the animal control department in the total amount of $4,530.
Is there a second?
I will second that motion.
Okay. Any further discussion?
Huh?
If not, Olson?
Aye.
Fenton?
Aye.
Merkin? Aye. Okay. Quote is accepted. Thank you very much.
Yeah, thank you. So see, even we get caught up in our own regulations, right?
Okay, next, Barb Steinbeck again for Watchtower or WatchGuard Attorney Redaction Software and Hardware.
Yes, this is a project that the county attorneys have asked us to look into and. This is something that really we had no control over. So we get videos from different entities. The City of Ames has gone toward the WatchGuard solution, and they're very proprietary, and a lot of the videos that they send to us have to be redacted, and you can't just pull up your redaction software and do this. You have to have the WatchGuard redaction software. So, and it is very processor intensive, so it does require its own hardware. So this quote is for software, and then I enclosed an email from Joel who did a quick hardware evaluation. It may be off by a couple $100s because of the whole tariff thing going on right now. A lot of our parts come from the Middle East or from the Asian countries. So it's approximately a $7,200 project, and the reason we're asking, it's not budgeted either way, and there was a little bit of a miscommunication in the timing of the project at budget time. So we thought they were going to do it before this year's budget, and they thought it was in this year's budget, so it didn't get into anybody's budget, but it was discussed at budget time.
So Barb, would you explain just for Lisa in just a couple of sentences about what the rule of thumb is about when the department pays for it and when it gets added to IT's budget?
Sure. And what we've done in the past is, in December, late November, December, we usually reach out to each department to want to get an understanding of what their IT needs are for the following year so we can put it in our budget. And as you know, sometimes it's hard to look a year ahead or a year and a half ahead. So usually we're pretty close. But this year, the county attorney thought maybe they needed the software sooner because of the amount of videos that were coming in. And it hadn't been fully implemented by City of Ames, but it was looking to be a problem. So they requested to have it done before the 2020 budget. And so in that case, if it's non-budgeted and it's within the previous budget year, we ask the departments to find money in their own budget. And I hope that's, I know I'm kind of rambling, but I hope that's clear. So anything that has been approved and in the IT budget, we are more than happy to follow through with. But if there is a request that comes in that we don't have money budgeted for, we ask that that department try to find money in their own budget. Does that make sense?
Okay.
So now this, since this is fiscal year 20, if we approve this amount, it'll go into IT's budget.
Correct.
So, Barbara, I just have one clarifying question. So the total amount is for the 7243.82. But it looks like the quote says 599, and then there's that plus the hardware, which is the 1253.82. Is that how I'm reading that?
Yes, the software itself is $59.99 or $59.90, and then the hardware to run that would be about $1,200.
Okay, thank you.
And that is, a computer usually costs between $700 and $900, so it is a really beefed up piece of hardware to run the software.
Gotcha, okay.
Any other questions?
Not for me.
Okay. And then this would, I would entertain a motion to accept the quote between Stroud County and WatchGuard for the software and hardware.
I'll make the motion to accept the quote between Story County and WatchGuard for the software.
Okay. Your second?
And the hardware.
And the hardware. Thank you. Yes.
Perfect. I would second.
Okay. Further discussion? If not, Hedden?
Aye.
Olson?
Aye.
Merkin? Aye.
Perfect.
Thank you.
Thank you, Board.
Okay.
Thank you.
Thank you for our very clear explanations about what's going on.
Okay. And now we have consideration of Rosalind Mackey Harris Architects as the consultant for the HVAC equipment replacement for the jail.
Good morning.
Good morning.
Good morning. Toby?
Sent out a request for proposals to start the design phase of the HVAC equipment upgrade for the Justice Center facility. Last week we received two proposals, one from RMH Architects out of Ames and one from IMEG located in Des Moines. Both proposals were evaluated by a group of three, Leanne Harder, John Eichel, and myself, and we judge them all off of their proposed price, experience in the type of project, their location, previous work with Story County, and their availability to begin. And we settled on RMH Architects. They happen to be the lowest dollar provider. And this is for the design. The proposals just asked for design services. RMH went ahead and included a price for if the project were to go to construction phase. But we would just, if the project goes to construction phase, we would handle that as an addendum to the design contract. So this request is just for the $14,000 design services. And then IMEG's design services total was $18,500, and they did not include a constructed administration cost. But we didn't ask for one. So is there any questions?
None, thank you. Very well explained, including yesterday our little phone call where I couldn't find all the documents.
Yeah,
okay.
Missing a couple of pages. Yeah.
Thank you.
You're
for
welcome.
So then, I would entertain a motion for accepting the proposal for design services at $14,000 for RMH.
I would make that motion. I'm going to just ask, Joby, do you want us to go ahead and do the $10,000 at this time?
I think
we
would wait and handle that as an addendum, like as planned. Just do the design, and then once if the project's approved by the board to move forward with the construction phase, then we would. That's generally how we handle these.
I would move $14,000. The contract be awarded to Rosalind Mackey Harris Architects for the design services for the HVAC equipment replacement at the jail housing facility.
Is there a second?
I will second that motion.
Okay. Any further discussion? All in favor, Olson?
Aye.
Hedmans?
Aye.
Merkin? Aye. Thank you very much.
Shelby? One other thing, I think we should, and then just go ahead and direct to work with County Attorney's Office to work on a contract for the design services.
I so accept that amendment.
Yeah. I'll second.
Okay. Voting on the amendment then? Olson?
I guess
so.
Aye.
Hedden's?
Aye.
Merkin? Aye.
Thank you.
Okay. I guess it could have been directed. But
yeah,
now you have a whole vote.
All right.
Okay, then we'll go on to department reports. Community Service Board of a report, Carla Webb. Good morning, Carla.
Good morning.
Good morning.
This is my quarterly report rounding out fiscal year 19, so it's from April to June. For our general assistance program, you'll see there we assisted 20 single households, 25 families, for a total of 45 for the quarter, for the fiscal year, it was 169 total single and family households that we helped. For referrals to other resources, we had 249 of those. The year to date was 1,026. We had 17 people that applied but did not return. For types of assistance, for rent, we were provided $17,073.47. Utilities was $1,064.95. And then for miscellaneous items, the bulk of this is going to be for burial, was $2,908. We had six individuals that we paid for in regards to substance use services. The next part of my report is something new that I put in here. It's a fiscal year review. I'm looking from FY16 to FY19. And I wanted to talk about this section a little bit. The General Assistance Program falls under Iowa Code Chapter 252, Support for the Poor. Iowa Code 252.1 defines a poor person, and they define it as to mean those who have no property, exempt or otherwise, and are unable because of physical or mental disabilities to earn a living by labor. This section shall not be construed to forbid aid to needy persons who have some means, when the board shall be of the opinion that the same will be conducive to their welfare and best interests of the public. I believe it was back in July when we had the general assistance appeal there. Supervisor Olson asked how our income guidelines were set. So looking back on that, the income guidelines, my understanding, were initially established with consideration of the Family Investment Program, so FIP, and food assistance amounts. Back when that was set, individuals who were receiving those full benefits would have been considered over income for our income guidelines. So if you recall, for a single person, it's $481 a month, $581 for a two-person, and then on up from there. It looks like back in 2008, a change was implemented where we no longer counted food assistance as income. So thus, more people would have become eligible because we were no longer counting that. And looking back, as far as I can tell, there has not been an increase to the income guidelines as far back as 2006, as far as I can tell. So with the income guidelines where they are at, you'll see in this report the assistance that we've provided over the last four fiscal years. It averages out to about $86,290 per year. The bulk of our assistance is in rental assistance for individuals, and then it would go down to would be funeral assistance, then utilities, and then bus tickets. So that's gives you a snapshot of, based on the income guidelines where we're at right now, this is the assistance we're able to provide, the number of individuals that we are able to help, where the guidelines are set at right now. For those individuals where we refer on to other resources, fortunately in Story County we do have a number of agencies that are able to assist those folks. And we always give them information on those options.
Thank
questions?
You.
Yeah. But if Lisa or Linda, do you have questions?
Supervisor Heddens, do you have any questions?
I don't. I just want to make a comment and say, Carla, just because I've worked in the area for a long time, I appreciate the detail of information that you've provided here. I also know that these are essential services for our vulnerable islands who reach out and need assistance. So I'm just glad that we are able to provide at the level that we can. I guess the one question I do we have any waiting list for any particular services?
I'm sorry.
Do we have any waiting list?
No, not for our general assistance program at all.
Okay. Thank you.
Mm-hmm.
So my question is that I know that you've referred out 1,026. Your report said there was 200, almost 300 denials this last quarter. Mm-hmm. So do you find that we have a lot of individuals who are just over the line, or is it over $100 over the line?
I would have to go back and look. My gut would say it's a lot over the line.
Okay.
If somebody is really close within like 10, 20 bucks, we have done exceptions in the past for that. But I think the majority of them you're going to see are quite a bit over.
And then once again, food assistance is not counted as part of income anymore.
Correct.
All right. Is assistance to families, and I'm sorry, I don't know what it's called now. It goes through different names, Santa, et cetera.
Yes.
Is that counted as part of income then?
The family investment program?
Family investment program.
Yes, that is counted as income.
Okay.
Yep.
So I appreciate the information. I know that there is a proposal right now on the federal level that would knock off another 500,000 families from food stamp assistance. So as we look at that moving forward, to see if our applications just kind of watch that, I understand that this is a program not meant to sustain people. It's to help them over a hump. It just, when I looked at the initial guidelines, I thought, boy, I couldn't live on that.
Right.
Yeah.
They are very low. Yeah.
Okay. Well, thank you. That's the information I asked for. So.
Okay.
Thank you
You're
very
welcome.
Much.
Okay. Any other questions?
Do you want me to talk about the MHDS part of the report with it?
Mm-hmm.
So as you know, we entered, Story County entered into an agreement with CICS for Story County to become the fiscal agent as of July 1st. And we're very appreciative of that, appreciative of the auditor's office for all their work that they've done. I think the transition has gone pretty smoothly, I would say. So we're grateful for their partnership with us. We did over 60 or about 60 FY20 contracts. And then throughout the year, we're continually adding providers into our network. So I anticipate even next year, and as we start to work towards the children's system and contracting with those providers, I anticipate the contracting only increasing there. We did hold our second meeting with providers, law enforcement, and other individuals to talk about the access network concept, and that's something that we're continuing to pursue as a network concept. So that lead agency would then work with providers for the crisis stabilization, substance use, and subacute services. They would be the coordinating body for individuals who are entering into the Access Center network. As you know, we've had a lot of legislative changes. The legislation that requires intensive mental health core services is to be implemented by July 1st of 2021, so we're currently working on that as well. The services that we need yet to develop in our region that are part of the mental health core services or the intensive mental health core services would be the Access Center services, the intensive residential service homes. We call those IRSH. So if you hear that term, that's what that means. Subacute mental health services, as well as crisis stabilization community-based. We do have crisis stabilization residential, which is the program that we have partnered with Mary Freely Medical Center to do the services at the Hazel location there in Ames. So we're continuing to work on getting those services developed in our region. We currently have administrative staff who are conducting a review of the Transitional Living Center services. This is, I think, a service that's unique to our region. I'm not sure that other regions have this available. It's the service where an individual can stay up to 90 days to develop a plan to reintegrate back into the community. We're looking at potential changes to this service that would allow the providers to draw down Medicaid funding and still meet the needs of individuals. Right now, this service is 100% regionally funded at over $1 million a year, and so we need to figure out how to draw in some Medicaid funds and so that we can pay for some of the more crisis services. So we're working on that. We're also in the process of looking at our 2080 agreement to address legislative requirements from the House File 690 for the Children's Behavioral Health System. We've entered into a contract with CIR for drop-in center services in Warren and Hamilton County. Once those get up and going, we'll have just two counties left in our region that will need to get drop-in center services up and going. And then also the CIT training was held. We partner with NAMI. Lisa, you might have to help me here. NAMI, Story County Attorney's Office, ISU PD, Ames PD. Am I missing anybody?
Correct. Yes, and CICS.
In CICS. So that training was held on in June with 18 law enforcement personnel attending. As far as on the community services side of things, we met with ISAC, and we also had a local provider agency that met with us as well to talk about database needs as we talk about the centralized intake process. They did a review of our meeting. We had an all-day meeting with them. I believe it was in May. And then ISAC submitted a report to us with their recommendation that we look at using the Community Services Network, which is the existing system that we use for MHCS services. So they had suggested that we look at doing enhancements to the current system. So we do have a phone call set up with them later this week to discuss next steps on that. And our staff continue to remain involved in various committee activities and then attend county trainings when possible. And Aaron Rewertz, as CVSO, did 101 interviews with veterans and surviving spouses this past quarter. Any questions?
Questions for Carla?
No, thank you.
You're welcome.
Good,
thank you.
Thorough report.
Thank you.
Okay. Thank you. Carla, I also want to thank you for the additional work that you're doing right now when we don't have a director of external operations with help with the asset billings and contracts and any asset issues that come up. I appreciate that very much.
You're welcome. You bet. It gets me over here a little bit more, so it's kind of been fun. So,
yeah.
Thank you.
Good. Thank you.
You bet.
Okay. Now we have Sue McCaskey with Animal Control Quarterly Report.
Good morning, Sue. You're lacking a visual aid today.
I did not bring a visual aid today. Mm-hmm. We have plenty of them I could have brought.
Yeah. Well, good morning.
So I've just got some numbers we can run through. It seems as though the winter that we had, the cat trend, primarily cats, usually runs in like we start getting stuff in May, June, and July. Those are our heavy months. Well, I think according to what we've heard is there is a lot of animals that just with our funky spring and winter didn't make it through. So we are now been pushed back. And so the numbers I'm giving you for April, May, and June, the amount of cats in was 70. The number of cats adopted was 45 for those 3 months. And then the cats that are euthanized and died were 5. And those were hopeless animals that we could not help. Dogs in April through June was 34. We had 40 adopted, and we had one that was euthanized. Our volunteer hours in April were 117 hours. Our May were 83, and June were 73. So that always drops off a little bit when the students go home. We have a lot of student support from Iowa State, so that usually drops off during the summer. And community service hours, and this is usually like court-mandated stuff, we didn't have any at this point in this quarter. After our animal calls, so May got real hairy for us. So we after hours, we had 7 in April, but in May we had 17 after-hour calls. So it was just, there were dog bites and cat bites and aggressive animals. There was just about anything it seemed like you could imagine. So May was kind of a... I'm glad it's the exception this time and not the rule because that was, we were just, seems like we were going home and going back out. So, and in June we had 6, so came back down. And just for your information, our current cat population is 172. So that's really good for us because we have had a lot of adoptions in July. And just to give you an example, one day in July, a couple weeks ago, we got in 20 animals in one day. We got 16 cats and 4 dogs in. So that just immediately, you know, your numbers go up. That being said, we've had a lot of adoptions in July, so things are starting to be where they're supposed to be. Our current cat population, 172, current dog, 18, 2 rabbits, 1 ball python, and 2 guinea pigs. Our total number of animals right now is about 195.
Could I ask where we are on adoptions and there? Are we doing anything for Clear the Shelters Day?
No, we are not.
Okay.
And that's a different kind of promotion. Our application system is run a little bit different than that. So for us, we choose not to do that. We were involved in that kind of thing over at Petco a few weeks ago. But since we do take applications and we have to check with, you know, the things that we need to verify on our applications, our system is a little different.
Okay. Thank you.
Donations to animal shelter from private donors and fundraisers in April was 842. In May, it was 6,919. And in June, it was 5,361 for a total of 13,122.54. And the breakdown of it was our shelter shindig, which was held on May 18th, brought in $4,300. That was from C&K. Our Chasing Tails Fun Ride on June 15th brought in $5,361. And we had Mutts, Muffins, and Mimosas on June 22nd. This is the first year event. It was down in Collins, and it was $282.36. The total for those is $11,061.54. And the private donations added on to that of $2,061 make up our total. So,
how does those fundraising breakdowns, how does that compare to like last year?
I would say, you know, dollar amount, there are a few of them we've done this year that we had not done before, but for the two larger ones, they came out just about the same.
Okay. Thank you.
Uh-huh. So we had other fundraisers in July, which will be next time. But, yeah, so we continue to have our fundraisers, and we continue to be very happy with the support that the people give towards the shelter. We have an open house. We're so excited. It's scheduled for Friday, but there's a notation of a date change. It should be September 27th. I had September 28th in my head, and then somebody told me that that was impossible. So, but it will be on Friday from 11 to 6. And we're going to have games, drawings, silent auctions. We've got a lot of prizes that we're going to be doing. We're going to have a shelter reunion for animals that were adopted there. Only requirement is please have a rabies tag on them. We're going to have food, pictures taken, tours of the shelter. And we're just trying to think of fun things for people to do and to come in and enjoy. And so there's a lot changed. It seems like, you know, just when you think one thing is done that amazes you, then something else is done that is like, wow, you know. So we had two incidences in, actually both of them were in May, June 15th, Sue. Okay. Anyway, we had two incidents involving horse trailers on county roads and interstates. So on May 24th, we had a truck and trailer heading north of Ames on I-35 at hydroplaned on a rainy day and went in the ditch. The trailer was a total loss, but the horse, we were able to get the horse out of it. We had brought our stock trailer with us and put the horse in it and transported it to Iowa State. The other one was actually on the night of our Chase and Tails fundraiser, and that, of course, was the one on the Roland Blacktop, where a young woman lost her life. And we actually went up there. We were actually at the fundraiser when we got called, but we had Iowa State called right away so their field services offices could come out and help us, because at that point the horse was standing, and it really just looked like it had some sort of a injury on its back, like hip. And so the horse did not want to load in the trailer, which is why it was being walked down the blacktop. And we tried to get it loaded. We couldn't. We gave it acepromazine, which is kind of a drug to kind of just chill it out, and it still didn't want to chill out. And keep in mind, the whole time this poor horse is standing. Finally, Iowa State showed up. We did get medication into it enough that the horse just went down so we could get it in. And with the help of the Nevada Fire Department, we were able, with straps and everything, I think there was 12 of us, to get this horse dead weight loaded into the trailer successfully. The horse was then taken to Iowa State, and when they got there, they started to look at the injuries and realized that the horse had a broken femur, which on a horse you can't do anything with. So the horse had to be euthanized. Remodeling at the shelter started to wind down. Joby's probably just smiling about that.
She got a fireworks permit.
Yeah. Painting the lighting odds and ends are being done by the end of June. We were waiting, well, by the end of June, we thought our parking lot would be put in, but there was an issue with it, so it will be done in August, my understanding. And, but we've got some fencing being fixed that just, you know, it's kind of like trial and error when you're putting animals in it. You've got Houdini, so you've got to always, you know, figure out how to keep them enclosed. So we're having some fencing things taken care of. We've had a lot of calls that we have gone on. A lot of the animals have not ended up in the shelter. When we had the heat wave that came through for a while, we had a lot of, we were checking on a lot of livestock, and we had some calls on, like, outside dogs that were outside, et cetera. So, and everybody was really good about complying. I, you know, it's still an issue of when you're suffering, the animals are suffering, and so, you know, you've got to do the same for them as what you're doing, try to keep them cool. So we were out on a calls for then. We have had both ringworm and respiratory come in the shelter, and we hate ringworm because it's like goes on forever, but with all of our stray cats. But we luckily have not seen any parvo, which is a big thing in a shelter. We have never had parvo in almost the 10 years that we've been at this location. So we use a very good disinfectant, and sometimes when I'm, you know, writing out the claim for it, I kind of cringe, but I know why we do it, because we don't have those parvo issues. And we do treat our animals that have respiratory or ringworm, and they're available for adoption. So, and so the importance, I want to talk a little bit about the importance of our donation account of Friends of the Animals. And so this great account was, you know, supplemented by terrific people, was enabled us to pay for half of the purchase of the building and the grounds, and also enabled us to pay for half of the remodeling that we did. And then this fund is also used for, you know, if anything that will directly benefit an animal, which obviously the shelter purchase and the remodeling will definitely do that. But it also takes care of injuries for animals. We have animals hit by cars. We have, you know, yesterday we came in, and, or we had a cat come in that had a, you know, it was broken in the back end, but they're not sure yet what. But it was taken to the vet, and so this money is there to directly help the animals. So people see return on what they've given to, and know that, you know, that's our goal, is to see that the animals that we have in our custody and that we take care of are taken care of. And our donation account is just, the money we raise is definitely very much appreciated, but it also is very much needed. So, and with that, I should say we've been taking off a lot of legs, taking out a lot of eyes. I know it sounds awful, but these animals are getting adopted. So, you know, they're not throwaway animals. They're finding homes. We remain classified as a no-kill shelter, which is qualified by having an adoption rate of 85% or higher. So we only euthanize animals that are so badly injured or sick that there's nothing that can be done by vet's advice. So our adoption rate remains extremely high, in the high 90s. I mean, we haven't sat down to figure that, but that's been that way for several years. And that kind of ties in with our donation account, I think, and also the support given by the county for vet bills, because if we didn't have that, we wouldn't be able to do what we do. So, you know, it's very, very good, and we're very proud of what's going on out there.
You should be. I just to kind of go back, you're talking about the disinfectants, but you have exceptionally high reviews when the state comes in every year to review you, and that is in part because of that care you do. And then just for the two of you, this came up when we were looking at the animal control law in 2017, et cetera, but I went around to the various towns, met with most of the city councils, and I got asked at a couple of them about, are we an animal control or animal shelter, given the fact that we do hold our animals longer than 5 or 7 days. And I was able, because of Sue's efforts with the Friends of Animals account, to assure them that we are not providing extraordinary care for animals out of county taxpayer dollars. That we, those, all that extraordinary care, that some people would say extraordinary, and that longevity is a result of the Friends of Animals account, because we're only taking care of basic needs through our tax dollars. So you just do a great job.
Thank you. Anybody have any questions?
No?
I do not.
All right. Thank you.
I'll do not.
Okay. Great report.
Thank you very much. Okay. And now we have a presentation on TIF by Lisa Markley and Leanne Harder.
I think my password yesterday, so I'll see if I remember it.
Okay. Good morning, Leanne.
I didn't put you on the agenda. Who put you on the agenda? This is very brief, okay? I did provide it to you. Lisa had asked, rightfully so, to make sure that she had time to review it before and ask questions if necessary, which I don't know if she didn't have questions or saving them for today. So I just wanted to talk a little bit about the available funds. But in doing so, I wanted to go back and just clarify and discuss with you what has been done with what we had brought in. So there were no URA projects, urban renewal projects, in FY19. We did borrow the last $1 million for phase three of TELC out of the dollars. There are two components to the TIF funding, the borrowed debt and the project funding, which is also considered debt, obviously. Revenue projections are based on the previous year levies when budgeting and the best available info. So I know it's frustrating, and I know we've had many conversations about TIF, and I know we've all sat down, and Lucy has been included. TIF is not easy to determine and or give you actual information about until it's over, until the year's over. But we can't, if we're going to collect TIF, we have to certify debt to it. So those are the two rules. So throughout time, aka 2013 through today, we've borrowed $7.3 million. The balance due on those debts is 4.2, a little over 4.2. The very first borrowing was 3.1 for Dakin's Lake. That will be paid off in FY22. Okay. We've borrowed $4 million for TUG. We've borrowed $159,200 for Better Paving. The projects that we have funded from 2014 to 2019, 1.555433 is the total projects that we have funded for individual requests. I did note the amounts payable. Leanne and I have talked about this. There's the three fiscal years, 16, 17, and 18, still have dollars that have not been drawn down.
And currently we have no restriction that can just stay there and continue to be drawn down. We don't have a...
It has to be.
Okay.
Unless you give it back to the entities, they either draw it down or you give it back to the county and all the levying authorities.
Return it to where it would have gone had there not been. Yes.
I know, Lisa, you had said at one time that you had told us who it was. When we talk on August 20th, if we could have that list available.
I can tell you if you'd like it.
I'm going to type right now. Okay.
So in FY16, that $80,082, Slater has $164.94 to draw, and the Prairie Rail Trail, $79,917.68. FY17, Collins has $22.50 to draw. Now,
2,250. Thank you.
Understand that they've drawn down some of the project, not all of it.
Right.
Is why these, marginal or small amounts. Slater has 45,000, And again, Prairie Rail Trail has 114,061. Cambridge, or FY18, excuse me. Cambridge has $781.76. Gilbert, $58,100. Slater, $94,500.
Thank you.
Now, I want to talk a minute about the Prairie Rail Trail, because that is a county project. And if Mike were here, he would roll his eyes because I nag him all the time about it. He also got a SERPTA grant on that, and he has to draw down those funds in a certain period of time. So he is using those funds before the TIP funds.
Thank you. That's helpful.
And I do remind him every time a claim comes through that, don't forget, we have these funds. You need to draw them down. So on to the most recent projections available. The revenue projections are based on the previous year's levies when budgeting, because that is the best available info. For the FY19 budget, Story County did estimate $968,779. The actual amount we brought in was $888,816.58. BPTC affects TIF properties, business property tax credits. BPTC changes every year. We cannot say, oh, we're going to get this amount, because it depends on what businesses file for BPTC credit. And then, as Lucy pointed out to me yesterday, not only that, but if there's a change, then it changes all the allocations throughout the state. So in the 99 counties, if there's a BPTC change, it changes all the allocations. BPTC is not something you want to talk to Lucy about, just so you know.
Okay. Thanks for the
one. It does change every year depending on the number of commercial entities that are in the TIF district. Okay? So let's go to best revenue projections for FY20 is now $904,015.66. The current debt obligation is $822,346.36. So the number you are wanting is 169.5 is my best estimate at this point in time. So I did also provide you with just a, these are the entities that have requested the amounts, or the amounts that we have given them over the 5 years, and the number of requests they've made.
Number of requests made or funded? This would be funded, right?
Funded. I'm
okay,
sorry.
Thank you. Because we have had a couple of times,
yes,
where not every request was honored.
Yes.
And we're probably there this year.
Do you have any questions for me? Is there anything else you want to know?
No, thank you.
I don't have any questions at this time either.
Okay. That's very helpful information. Thank you.
Leanne, anything to add?
I'm here to support Lisa.
Okay.
You did a great job. Excellent.
Okay. Thank you very much. Anything on upcoming agenda items?
I don't think, not that we've not already talked about at some point. I think August 20th and August 27th are going to be the big days.
Mm-hmm.
Bring
yeah.
us back lunch.
Yeah. We are going
yep,
to...
I, no, just to say I agree that I think they're going to be big agenda days.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and we will have an abbreviated agenda next week because Supervisor Hedman's won't be here, even by phone. So, next, we have public forum number two, comments from the public for items not on the agenda. Are there any members of the public who wanted to make a comment? Okay. Hearing none, I'll close the public forum. And we'll move on to liaison assignments, committee meeting updates, and announcements from the supervisor. Supervisor Hedman, do you have any announcement?
Yeah, just the one thing that I will update you on is Central Iowa Recovery is still in discussions of making changes to our 28E agreement. They are looking to take over their enfold CIR under Hamilton County. We haven't received any resolution from Hamilton County yet. I do anticipate something being presented at our next board meeting. If not, it would be relatively soon. So I will bring that forward when that does occur.
Okay. Thank you. Supervisor Olson.
In addition to taking a little bit of tour on some of the secondary roads and stopping and talking to some people while I was out last week, I stopped by Hickory Grove. Happened to get there while the contractor for the beach house was there. And so we had a chat, and he passed on a compliment about our staff, our conservation staff, that I will pass on into the conservation board, but praise to be working with Luke, our Fielmeyer, and also for Ryan. He found him very easy to work with, and he specializes in these kinds of projects throughout Missouri and Iowa. So he was very, had a lot of praise. Then I just drove through the campgrounds, and I was impressed. They were immaculate. Just immaculate. And so what happened, the host was there. I just stopped and said hello, and so I was very impressed. So I wanted to make note of that. I'm going to go to the Board of Health meeting this afternoon, Lisa. I'm just going to sit in the audience. There are a couple of items on the agenda that I think are headed our way, so I just want to kind of get a little preview in my mind, if you don't mind, but I'm going to sit up at the board table. So.
No, I appreciate you stepping in. Thank you.
I'm going to be out of this office on Friday the 9th and then next Monday the 12th, but I'll be in Des Moines. So if there's any big disaster emergency, I can zip right up to highway to be back here if you need me. And then just a reminder to everyone in the staff that the ISAC, Iowa Association of Counties, meetings are Thursday, August 22nd, and Friday, August 23rd. And so finding elected officials and some department heads might be kind of tough if you're planning on conducting business at that level or have questions for the 22nd and the 23rd. And I'm done with my little update.
Okay. Thank you. I have nothing. I would entertain a motion to adjourn.
I would so move.
Second.
Okay, Olson?
Aye.
Pedden?
Aye.
Merkin? Aye. Meeting adjourned.
Thank you.